Totally Football Show. Today, Boxing Day traditions ahoy, as men dressed in red hunt foxes off the field, while at Spurs, Jose fails to find any space in Ndombele, like the rest of us. Also, Saints elsewhere, as Southampton climb up to 14th, and we salute the last round of the decade as they play Chelsea under Mikel Arteta. It's all coming up in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Nowhere I'd rather be than here in the Totally Studio on this Friday. What are we at, Duncan Alexander? 27th of December. Merry Christmas to you, Oileopter Sailor. Also here, is it God Jul, Frida Fagerland of Aftonbladet?
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Okay. And happy sixth day of Hanukkah to you, Raphael Honigstein.
Thank you, James.
Boom. Everybody have a good Christmas stroke festive period? Yes, good. Football, Rafa, because it doesn't stop ever. And particularly vintage round of said sport on Boxing Day. Gian, or it might be Gian, says, what was your favourite Boxing Day football moment? I'll come to you, Frida.
Favourite moment?
Favourite moment of Boxing Day.
That was a tough one since I was at the Tottenham Stadium. And
were there no good moments there?
There were a few, but it was also, you know, very rainy and so on. So I think I have to go with maybe Leicester-Liverpool later on.
Or getting home from the football. That might have been a really nice moment when you just got home.
Well, the tube didn't run, so I had to walk my way home, which it's pretty far. So
is it? Okay. Yeah. All right.
How fast to walk?
I think it took me like 2 hours. So
you walked all the way back in the rain on Boxing Day?
Yeah, I did.
I will phone my editor at The Athletic. He might be interested in that.
Yeah.
As a feature.
Powerful walk.
Rafa's puzzled why everyone's laughing at this point. But Rafa, do you have a special moment? Yeah.
Special moment? No, I just enjoyed being at Chelsea. I hadn't seen them live in quite some time. And Boxing Day was a good opportunity to see them. And also the much improved Hasenhüttl-esque Southampton.
Yeah, amazing.
That's
amazing.
Pretty good.
And you, Duncan, you?
I think I will go for Trent Alexander-Arnold's goal because it kind of capped off one of those displays that players do every now and again where they really kind of announce them. I mean, everyone knew he was a great player, but that really was a kind of, you know, here I am. I'm possibly going to be the best English player / in the world for the next decade. So
that was the consecration, you think?
I think so.
All right. It was also quite possibly the night that the title race was declared as dead as Jose's dog, Liverpool visiting their nearest rivals.
His dog, what's this?
Did you not hear about Jose's dog? Oh, Duncan, I'm so sorry to be the one.
I filter out bad dog news, obviously, being a new dog owner.
Right.
Yeah, so he's got a dead dog.
I feel like Jeff Shreves here, Jose's dog died. He was asked by Jim Rosenthal, I think. Yes, ask your parents. But anyway, he was asked by Jim Rosenthal how his Christmas had been, and Jose said with admirable candour, not great actually, because my dog died, and for me, my dog is my family. Ouch. Anyway, but the title race, Duncan, the title race, that's it, huh?
Yeah, it looks pretty dead and buried, we can't speculate. But I think, Leicester, it wasn't just the fact Liverpool scored four goals, it was the way they just controlled the game from start to finish. Leicester didn't have a shot of any kind till the second half. It really was one of the great displays. It reminded me, you occasionally got it with the Arsenal Invincibles, you got it with Mourinho's Chelsea, you got it a couple of times at United when Ronaldo was there, when it was just a really kind of dominant performance and, you know, kind of just sets their stall out as the best team.
Right. Joe Gilmore tweeting, mad to think this is the same team that got beat 5-0 by Aston Villa. You enjoyed this game once you got home through the rain, Frida.
I really did, yeah. And I know that we've been talking about the big six not existing anymore, but I guess we have to talk about the big two nowadays, since both Liverpool and Manchester City have shown that they are by far the best teams in this league. But I agree with Duncan about Trent Alexander-Arnold. I thought that he was absolutely amazing, and we've been talking about him being one of the best right backs in the world. I mean, I think we should talk about him being one of the best players in the world, because maybe he had some troubles with his defensively before, but I mean, he didn't put a foot wrong against Leicester, and he was absolutely superb from start to finish.
Yeah.
The amazing thing, this has been widely described, I think, including by Liverpool players and Klopp himself, as the best performance of the season, but this has come on the back of 17 wins out of 18, which is not usually sort of the pattern of a team underperforming by their own standards. And that is a bit frightening, I think, for the rest of the league, if Liverpool actually starting to play well now.
Right.
Being in the position that they are in. But even, I mean, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, sort of caught the eye and capped it off with a goal. But I actually thought that Jordan Henderson had an unbelievable game. For a guy who still a year ago, I remember at Anfield, was getting pelters when he was playing as a makeshift right back. And the crowd really got on his back saying, oh, he's rubbish and he's this and that. And has never really been fully loved, maybe until the very tail end of last season with the Barcelona game and his performance in the final. And they were singing his name, and he has become a completely different and so much improved, so vastly improved player. I thought he was sort of the face of that performance yesterday.
This was the fixture that people had pointed to as potentially the trickiest for Liverpool because of their flight to Qatar and the extra time and the fact that Leicester had been so tough at home. But in fact, Leicester had only conceded 5 goals at the King Power Stadium all season. They shipped another 4 in the space of the 90 minutes against Liverpool. Will Date says, which coincidentally is the byline on my Twitter profile, was yesterday the most harmful Boxing Day for foxes on record? I mean, yeah, there was also Julian Morn, wasn't there, with a baseball bat.
Killed a fox with a baseball bat, which may be a tradition in certain bits of the country. Obviously, there's other fox-related badness on Boxing Day.
It certainly is. Niall Norton, a question for you, Oily. Is Leicester's combined XG in both games against Liverpool of 0.22 the lowest of this or last season?
It's a good question.
I will
follow up with him and answer him.
All right. That's really low.
That is really low, yeah. I mean, people kind of forgot that the game at Anfield between the two sides, because Liverpool scored a last-minute winner from a penalty, it seemed like they just, you know, snuck through. But they actually completely dominated Leicester in that game. They've kind of, their best two performances of the season probably have been the two games against Leicester. And just to put Liverpool's kind of season into context, they've already got as many points as they did in the whole of 2011-12.
Was that under Hodgson?
That was under Dalglish.
All right.
And they...
Already?
Yeah. And they're not even halfway through. And their points total of 52 is already more than 313 teams in Premier League history have recorded in a whole season.
So. That sounds like a lot. I don't know where we're processing those numbers.
It's quite a lot, yeah.
Yeah, we're beyond finger territory, so... Yeah. Just a lot, basically. Casper Young says, should Rodgers have changed his system last night after it became clear that Maddison wasn't doing enough defensively to stop Trent? Don't know. Is there something they could have done? Could they have had more lights at the start? I felt they didn't do enough pyrotechnics in the build-up. Or is it just when you face a team like that with Hendo and Trent on fire that there's not much you can do to limit
the damage? Liverpool haven't really pushed both fullbacks up in bigger games that often, especially away from home. So this was perhaps unexpected, the way that they really were going for it. But they were able to do so because the midfield was so solid. Henderson covered so much ground. He protected the back two so well that both Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold could push up. And then when you have those two guys in support of the wide forwards, it's very hard to deal a team like that, especially a team that switches the ball, and this goes back to Trent, switches the ball so well from one side to the other to stretch sides.
Joe Gomez had a good game as well. You know, used his pace a couple of times to sort of nullify a couple of Leicester breaks. So, I mean, you know, Naby Keita had another good game, you know, sort of transitioned the ball really well. Yeah, they don't really have many weaknesses at the moment.
Is Hendo now performing in a role, a la Makélélé role, the Kanté role? Is he doing that kind of thing, just basically covering everything in midfield and mopping up everything in front of the defence?
Well, I thought last night he was. I mean, he's often played, when Fabinho's there, he often plays in a more of a number 8 role, sort of a more shuttling role. But yesterday he was most often the most defensive midfielder. He often also... drop back to receive the ball from the two centre backs, which then makes it difficult for any team to press when you have three guys in close proximity to each other, plus the fullbacks really high up the pitch. I just thought his all round game was just perfect. He was always there. He always got a foot in. and he played with a real presence and sort of character.
He even managed to kill a couple of minutes at the end with what looked like a bad injury, but was possibly just a mild bruise. I mean, that's kind of what you want from your captain in a big game.
Very nice. Quick shout to Dan Kennett, whose Alisson stat I borrowed and didn't credit last time out. Liverpool next up will be hosting Wolves, who are in action this evening against Man City. Leicester will be visiting West Ham this weekend, of whom more shortly. Next up, we'll be talking about the top four race and Saints.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Top four race took another twist on Thursday with the incumbents Chelsea losing 2-0 at home to Southampton. Frida, you were walking. Whereabouts would you have been in the rain at this point?
I don't know, maybe in Islington or
Islington,
something.
Islington, right. Yeah. Just trying to, what were you, did you have headphones or were you just thinking and cursing England and stuff?
I don't really know. I was so focused.
Were you? On what? Yeah. That's my question. Just getting home?
Yeah, right. I think so.
Okay. It's a hell of a story. We'll come back to that. But you were at Stamford Bridge.
I was.
Good Lord. Saints. Not only a 2-0 win at Chelsea, first time Chelsea have lost back-to-back games there since 2011, but they
Frank
dropped...
Frank Lampard did not like that stat.
Did he not?
Him. Did
right.
not like it at
but,
all.
But the crazy thing was that everyone had said about Saints going into this, well, they're all right, they've got Danny Ings, but they didn't even have him this time. They stuck him on the bench.
They did, and it was interesting because I think looking at the team sheet, you thought, okay, this is probably a way to manage the fixture list, and maybe they felt, you know, Chelsea away is not going to be the best opportunity, so you rest your most important player, the most important striker. But as it turned out, the combination of Adams and Obafemi was really tough to deal with for Chelsea. They had pace, they had a bit of movement. Adams with the back towards goal was pretty effective, and it made it very difficult for Chelsea. And there were, I think, a couple of really important factors underlying this performance and their win. One was, I think, having seen what West Ham and Bournemouth had done to Chelsea. Hasenhüttl admitted later that there was no fear, that there was a sense that this Chelsea can be beaten and we can get a result here. And secondly, I think Chelsea just found it again for a third consecutive time really difficult to break down a team at home. They rely a lot on the wide players creating stuff. When you have the combination of Azpilicueta and Callum Hudson-Odoi on one side, with Hudson-Odoi always going inwards, and Emerson and Willian on the other side, there just wasn't quite enough pace and not quite enough ingenuity to create stuff. And up front, Kante then is often a little bit isolated in the middle because Jorginho plays very deep. And the overall effect is a Chelsea side that just lacked that little bit of oomph in the final third.
Right. Saints, though, I mean, they had that extraordinary 9-0 at home to Leicester. But recently they put a run of four wins in their last six together. Premier League panel saying that it's been when Hasenhüttl ditched three centre-backs for his Leipzig-style 4-2-2-2 that the results have suddenly come together. Double pivot, Ward-Prowse in a box-to-box Naby Keita role with Højbjerg holding. And it's all worked very well, and it proves how clever Saints were to give him time. Is that a fair tactical analysis of Hasenhüttl's approach here?
Yeah, I don't know if it was so much the formation. I think it was Hasenhüttl saying later that he felt the big difference was the confidence that had come from previous results, that the team felt that what they're doing works, that they don't have to be afraid on the ball. I mean, the second goal is a great case in point because it happened on the back of, I think, more than 30 passes where Southampton showed everyone else and themselves that they can actually play a bit. They don't have to be as direct all the time.
Well, and also we've talked all season about how Southampton haven't been that bad. They just haven't been able to finish. They've been way under their XG. But yesterday at Chelsea, they only had three shots on target and they scored two goals. So maybe this is the start of the shift into, you know, I always thought they'd probably be okay, and that's kind of looking how it's going to be.
You've been
now
vindicated by events, Duncan. Have you seen the second Southampton goal, Frida?
No, I actually haven't.
Oh, really? Well, we should get that up. It went on forever. I mean, it was, as you said, it was about 30 passes. It went back and forth, up and down the field. All Southampton passes, and then eventually up the end, and then a wonderful little move before Bertrand, clever finish.
I mean, I think Lampard also did a bit of a, you know, when you're playing Football Manager and you change the formation and he got the result away at Tottenham and it worked, but that wasn't necessarily the right approach to then carry on in the next game at home to Southampton.
So I think 45, I wouldn't know.
Fair.
I also do think that it can't be a coincidence that Kovacic wasn't on the pitch yesterday, because it seems like every time he's missing, Chelsea is not doing so well. Sometimes they need a player like that going, being a bit more straightforward, and I actually do think that he's been Chelsea's best player overall this fall.
There's some interesting comments from Lampard after the game, apart from refusing to get into the reasons why David Luiz was sold. He did not want to give any ammunition to Arsenal or create any headlines.
Who they're going to be facing next, of course.
Yeah, when he was asked about that. But he also said that he learned a lot about the players and that he felt that there was a lack of character and a lack of
personality,
courage,
yeah,
on the ball in the final third, which is interesting. He then also went out of his way to say that this does not apply to Hudson-Odoi, who's coming back from injury and he needs more time and tried his best. But he looked very disappointed yesterday.
Right.
He made the point, which I think is a good one, that Chelsea, halfway stage of the season, are probably slightly ahead of the expectations that most people had before the start of the season, when they thought, oh yeah, they're probably going to struggle. No new players, new manager, maybe sixth or fifth. So it's going okay, but of course they started so well that the bar was raised, and now they're struggling to keep up with that early form.
A lot of people picking up on his comments as well about sticking with young players. He said, if we're not careful, we might end up in a situation like where we were before, where absolute top World Cup players in this moment were at Chelsea when they were 20-21, and managers didn't stick with them. Anyway, they are still top four. They are still in fourth place. Next up, it is Arsenal. And you're going to be there, Frida.
Yeah.
Pack your walking boots. This is when? Sunday at 2 o'clock. It's their first home game under Mikel Arteta, so lots of storylines there.
Yeah, definitely. And it's hard to really know what we are going to get from this game. But
right.
I don't know really what's up with Chelsea, because before they were scoring a lot of goals, and we spoke about the defense being like their main issue. But now they actually have a quite a good defense, or at least, I mean, it can always get better, but you understand what I mean. But now they're not scoring goals.
Yeah.
And I do think that since Lampard spoke about Callum Hudson-Odoi as well during the press conference, it's worrying that he seems to lack so much confidence. And I think that he really needs to put his head down and work pretty hard, because it seems like maybe some of the comments by fans and so on, maybe that have got to him.
Right.
Because that's what I thought when I heard Lampard speaking about it. So.
He could have been at Bayern now, of course, Rafa.
Yeah, could have been. But of course, this Achilles injury is sort of effectively stopped the deal. I think it's worked out well for him. He got a great contract and perhaps more recognition because of that. So they played it very well from that point of view. But yeah, I think it takes time for a young player, especially after such a bad injury. It's probably the worst injury you can have in football, with the exception of breaking your leg. So we shouldn't be perhaps that surprised if he's a little bit up and down in his performances.
Fair enough then. All right, Arsenal coming up on Sunday. Arsenal-Chelsea. Arsenal, who on sort of mid-afternoon on Boxing Day went down to the Vitality Stadium and had a 1-1 draw. Duncan, can you draw lots of conclusions from that about what Arteta ball is going to consist of?
Well, they definitely played a bit differently. It was a bit more positive. They still conceded from the first shot on target they faced, so some Arsenal traditions live on. But they had more shots in that game than they did in their previous two matches combined.
Interesting.
So that is a definite improvement.
Also, Mesut Ozil was very much part of the whole package.
Yeah, Arteta went out of his way to kind of praise him, say he's been incredible in training, whether that's a kind of, you know, you can play an away game and do some stuff. But he was fairly integral in the Arsenal goal, kind of played it to Nelson, who had a sort of scuff shot which reached Aubameyang, who then tucked it in. So it felt like a step forward. Although it was only a draw and Arsenal still aren't in a great position in the league, it feels like going into the Chelsea game at home, they've got something to work with.
Right. One win in 11 for Arsenal against the Chelsea side, who've lost 5 of the last 7.
These teams used to be good. So, yeah. But yeah, I think it's an interesting game, because whoever loses that match is kind of really plunged into narrative world, aren't they? So
right.
Yeah, but I think Chelsea have a lot more to lose than Arsenal, because you're probably at the stage where you sort of have written off the season at some level of consciousness and think that Arteta now needs to show just enough progress to earn the confidence going forward. I think it's a little bit, it could be, if things go well for Arsenal, it could be a little bit reminiscent of when Klopp took over at Liverpool. I mean, the league form never really improved. They had a good run in the Europa League, which got them all the way to the final, and it did just enough for everyone to think, okay, things are going in the right direction. And I think that's probably what Arteta needs to do rather than getting too many good results, which I think is going to be difficult.
Right. Yeah, the only thing I would say is they're only 5 points above the relegation zone.
And I like to say they're only 2 points above the teams that are just above the relegation
zone. That is one of the classic phrases of English football. I don't think they're in any danger of going down, but that kind of spectre could affect the players if it carries on.
Certainly could. What about those Jadon Sancho to Chelsea stories? Are they for real, Rafa?
There is a small chance that Dortmund will decide, okay, you know what, there's going to be so much money on the table, we'll do this deal. Mm-hmm. But they're looking for another striker, a proper number nine. Mertens apparently has said no to him. They still think they have a chance with Erling Haaland.
Right.
But the last thing they really want to do is lose their most creative wide player, with the exception of Royce, but he plays mostly through the middle as a number nine and a half. So it is not impossible, but it's described to me as extremely unlikely.
It's that time of year, and everyone's making resolutions to just get better at everything. And it's no different at the Emirates. New manager, new defence, new midfield, maybe a new identity, a new captain perhaps, better fans, new board would be good. But at Paddy Power, we reckon it'll be a case of new year, new Arsenal. So we're offering money back as a free bet on all markets if they beat Man United on New Year's Day. Paddy Power, home of the money back special. On this match only, pre-match singles, match refund £10, online only, no shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Race for fourth update. Chelsea's margin is now 3 points to Spurs and Sheffield United. With plucky underdogs Man United, they couldn't, could they? Only 1 point further back. Now, Spurs, they got off to a terrible start against Brighton, didn't they, Frieda?
It wasn't like Brighton was dominating the game at all, really. But Tottenham wasn't either. So Adam Webster, he sure knows how to score on North London stadiums. But I can't remember him celebrating this wildly after the goal at the Emirates. He just stood and screamed for quite a bit, actually, after the goal. And not towards the Brighton fans, but towards the Tottenham fans, which almost made me think, is he an Arsenal supporter? Because that was the feeling you got.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I'm not sure about that. But yeah, in the end, obviously they turn things around, but I mean, you could say that Moussa Sissoko and Harry Winks, you know what you get when you put them on the pitch as a central midfield, and they're lacking some abilities that could be provided by someone like Ndombele. Uh-huh. But I found it quite interesting what Mourinho said during the press conference afterwards, that Ndombele wasn't injured; he was just scared. Which is quite an interesting thing to say about a player.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, according to Mourinho, he fears being injured again. So he's not feeling ready to play again.
Right.
Which is quite, I mean,
it's unlike Mourinho to start falling out of midfielders. So,
Sissoko, though, I thought that was extraordinary. So he was on 4 yellow cards for the season, one away from picking up a one-game suspension. I don't know if he plays fancy football, but if he did, he'd been well aware of what the implications of getting a booking would have been. And rarely have you seen somebody go out and actively search for a way into the referee's notebook, as he did.
And Mourinho, he called the booking of Winks and the suspension on Son as being, you know, it wasn't fair, he said. But he couldn't say so much about the booking on Sissoko. But, I mean, of course, he's in deep trouble now, as in he has to do something different against Norwich. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
And Norwich, you've now fallen to bottom of the table, and the numbers are beginning to get very limited indeed. But were Brighton a bit unlucky, do you think, not to take something for this game?
I think they have struggled a bit. I mean, they had four players missing from the squad, which is obviously a lot for Brighton. And that goal, I mean, they did pretty well and they were creating quite many chances. And I really enjoy watching Aaron Moy. I think he's absolutely brilliant and he's really hard to play against. And he was really good at the Emirates when they won. He was also very good yesterday. But in the end, I think they just fatigued a bit. And Tottenham, obviously the Harry Kane goal came like in the right moment, and then Dele Alli's goal is a stunner. So
yeah, certainly was some great goals yesterday. You haven't seen the second Southampton one, but that's a treat. And of course, there's Jordan Ayew's for Palace. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I actually did.
Right, that was amazing. Oh, there was also Mason Greenwood in Man United's terrific romp at home to Newcastle. They're very much in the mix there, aren't they? Top four wise.
Yeah, and fans of nostalgia will be loving them surging up the table. It's good to see. Just quick one on Spurs.
They
kind of almost need to sell Eriksen, I think, in January, because he's a bit like that kind of an ex-partner that you keep ringing over the festive period, because
I don't know what you mean, Duncan.
Huh? They keep, Spurs struggle, and then it's like you can see Mourinho go, oh, I'm going to have to bring Christian Eriksen on to try and change his game. And I think the sooner that kind of, you know, functionality is ended, the better.
That's a chilling parallel you've drawn there. Okay, what are their prospects of selling Christian? All right, we'll move on. Longstaff opened the scoring. Great stat. You'll know this one, Duncan, about he's the third player ever to score both his first Premier League goals in two different matches against Man United.
It's true.
Can you name the other two?
No.
I made a note of it somewhere.
Yeah, I didn't.
We'll come back to that one, listener. But Mason Greenwood, if you're a fan of him and stats, then you'll enjoy the fact that the only teenager with more goals now in Europe's big five leagues is Jadon Sancho.
Mm.
Yeah.
Also, if you like stats,
yes.
And I admit I sort of do, it was nice to see Marcus Rashford, the top scoring player with all the letters from Amazon in his name, score a prime number, the third goal of the game.
So, fantastic.
Lovely stuff.
Also, if you're a fan of knee slides, Mason Greenwood did a really, really good one. And a lot of people are fans of knee slides. Do you have a favourite celebration, Frida?
I don't know. I just noticed that Trent Alexander-Arnold copied Kylian Mbappé yesterday.
Oh, right. Yeah, the kind of just statuesque kind of...
Yeah.
I am Trent Alexander-Arnold. Look upon my works, ye mighty, in despair.
Yeah.
I think that's the subtext there. Right. Okay, anyway, so Man United, big victory there, coming from behind and that. Sorry, Duncan, did you want to pitch in more?
Just a bit of stuff on this game.
Right, yeah, go for it.
No, our friend Michael Cox pointed out amusingly on Twitter during this game that it was very on brand from Manchester United, because as they started the game ahead of Newcastle, they played quite badly. Newcastle then take the lead and go above them in the league table, and United suddenly, play better, as is their wont. I also enjoyed in this game very rare breaking of the fourth wall in the commentary.
Oh.
Because the United fans, as they will do, were singing their own, their unfavourable song about Alan Shearer, who was the co-commentator.
Oh.
And the commentator pointed it out to Shearer, who then had to comment about 70,000 people abusing him, which you don't really get in football commentary very often.
Right.
He dealt with it admirably, I thought.
I don't like it when people break the fourth wall. Do you, listener? Anyway, Sheffield United drew 1-1 with Watford. We might touch on that later on, because next up it is the battle at the bottom. Hello, Lob. It's a shame, says Lob, that Frida Fagerlund and Carl Anka aren't on together, because in Sweden, everyone watches Donald Duck on Christmas Eve, and his Swedish name is Carl Kalla Anka. Is this right, Frida?
It's very true, yeah.
So, first of all, Donald Duck in Sweden is called Kalla Anka.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It's basically, I mean, Carl is a Swedish name.
Okay. So
the nickname of Carl is Kalle.
Right.
And Anka is duck in Swedish.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And on Christmas Eve, everybody watches Donald Duck.
Yeah, it's a very strange tradition that's been going on like forever.
Well, possibly not forever, because...
Well, at least 50 years, maybe 60 years.
What other what other different things do you get up to at the festive period as Swedish people?
We open our gifts on the 24th,
right,
which many people find strange, but I don't know why we do that.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have a different kind of buffet, I guess. Many mince pies.
Is it herring-based?
It's herring, salmon, and stuff like that.
That sounds great.
Ham.
Fantastic.
Duck.
Maybe a duck.
Perhaps
some
an anchor.
Might do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carl Anka, not Donald Duck, sadly, but actually the journalist Carl Anka, will be in our next show.
Oh.
Right. And he's got an amusing anecdote to tell about Donald Duck as well. So make sure you don't miss that one, listener. And indeed yourself, Frida. How do you say Donald Duck in German, Rafa?
Donald Duck.
Really? That's very un-German.
I know. But Scrooge is Dagobert Duck.
Dagobert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what are the three?
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Yeah, they're Tick, Trick, and Track.
All right, in Italian, they're qui, quo, qua. Here, there, and, you know, the other. Nice. Anyway, the bottom three is Norwich, Watford, and Villa, who are only 1 point off safety. From Villa up to 18th, you've got five teams within 4 points of each other. In descending order, Saints, Brighton, Bournemouth, and West Ham. This coming weekend, Brighton and Bournemouth play each other. Watford take on Villa, that's huge. While West Ham, who are now 1 point off the bottom three after their defeat at Palace, have Leicester. Now, first off, the IU goal.
Oh, he's still got it. And still, IU! Oh, what a goal for Crystal Palace! Absolutely magnificent!
Double jerk back, the quick feet. And what about that for a finish?
Are you serious? As you know, I mean, it was extraordinary, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I ill-advisedly let my son stay up to watch Match of the Day, which backfired heavily due to fatigue the next day. But he pointed out it's the sort of goal that you try and do in the garden, but you'd never do in a real game. It's sort of true. He kind of dribbled past a player, did a
pirouette.
Well,
he does the roulette, and then he does a 1-2 past another two players, and then chips
and then
the
dinks
keeper.
The keeper. It's goal of the season.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in the conversation. Where does this leave? While we, you know, salute Palace, who are quietly doing the business, ninth place right now. Where does this leave Pellegrini? Is he back in the nearest bed to the door again?
I think so. I mean, there's a lot made about the return of Lukasz Fabianski in goal, but if your goalkeeper is going to be the big improvement, that already shows that there is something seriously wrong with your team. And I think West Ham and Pellegrini have always shown that they can turn up in the bigger games when there's a bit more attention and perhaps less pressure on them to perform. They can be quite organised, they can work quite hard, but when it comes to your humdrum fixtures, when they're expected to create stuff, there just isn't enough there, which is strange, because player by player they have one of the more decent sides, you'd think. So I wouldn't, you know, it's not a surprise really that in the end you're thinking, well, the squad is not a relegation squad. We have to change something at the very top.
Could be in the bottom three if Leicester have their way this weekend. In other West Ham-related festive news, did you see the Mikel Antonio story, Frida?
Yeah, I did.
If you didn't, listener, let me tell you that Kia Racina was in her living room with her family on Christmas Day when a Premier League footballer, that's you, Mikel Antonio, dressed as a snowman, crashed a Lamborghini into her front garden. It was 6:30 p.m. They heard a massive bang outside their home in Balham. They went outside to find that Mikel Antonio had driven his Italian supercar into their bin shed, another wall he couldn't beat.
Nice one.
Yeah.
He aiming for the chimney?
I don't know.
He was dressed as a Santa, no? Not just a snowman.
Right. It says snowman. There's a picture of a snowman.
He's got a false carrot for a nose.
Right. Yeah, that's very much snowman territory for me.
It's kind of
it says
like
Kia. Oh, no, you go ahead.
It's like kind of like a Premier League footballer's version of Cluedo. You know, you have to pick a... So it's Mikel Antonio in a Lamborghini dressed as a snowman.
In Balham. My main concern, says Kia, was that it was petrol and everyone would have to get out of the house because a lot of smoke was coming up from the car. I was fearing the worst. Like, what if the car blows up? He, Antonio, was on the phone shouting to someone saying he was all right. He kept saying, "Don't keep telling me I'm stupid," to the person on the phone. "You should be asking me if I'm all right."
Where have you read all this?
On The Athletic, actually. Yeah, no, this was another Athletic scoop because I've not seen it widely reported, but somebody, I guess, knows Kia on, you know, within The Athletic's burgeoning staff. And it's a wonderful story.
We have our people everywhere.
I'm sure you do.
You actually have, yeah.
Oh, she's a YouTube sensation, says producer Ben. It's very much across that kind of thing. Brilliant. Well, that was he was well enough to play against Crystal Palace, I was heartened to see. Norwich will be hosting Spurs this weekend. They are now bottom of the table after losing at Villa. They've only picked up 2 points from last six games. Can you see much light at the end of the tunnel for Daniel Farke?
I mean, they haven't been playing badly, I think. There's hardly a game where you say Norwich were abject or didn't create chances, but I think the overall balance just isn't quite there. You know, you play well, you stay true to yourself, you play an expensive game, then you have to take your chances and have to defend better. But, I mean, 12 points is getting into pretty desperate territory.
Mm.
I just hope that they recognise that it's probably not down to the manager.
Yeah.
And stick with him.
Okay.
If you're going to do that, if you're going to say we're not going to spend loads of money, we're going to stick to our principles, then go down with dignity and use the money you've got from the Premier League to improve the team and come back up. I mean, West Brom did it. It's a valid way.
Burnley did it.
Yeah, it's a valid way of approaching.
And his stock is still very high in Germany. In fact, he was in contention and perhaps still is for the succession of Lucien Favre at Dortmund.
Mm.
They have seen what he's done and they like it. A little bit like David Wagner, who I think wasn't really seen as culpable for Huddersfield relegation when he left halfway through the season last year. I think people are looking at the bigger picture and think it's probably not down to him.
Jan Sefer, is he in for a lot of big roles as well?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay, all right then. Brighton Bournemouth, how excited are you about that? That's Saturday, it's the early kickoff, so there's not long to wait, Frida.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I mean, it's two very good managers. And I think that Potter is doing a great job in Brighton, as we've seen many times. The problem might be that he doesn't have a depth in the squad, really. So playing again 48 hours later might be even tougher for them compared to the slightly bigger teams that have bigger squads. But yeah, I mean, Bournemouth, they've certainly come around a bit.
What those, I mean, the 4 points from the games against Chelsea and now Arsenal?
I thought maybe that Eddie Howe was on the verge of leaving Bournemouth.
Did you think?
He's been there so many years, and sometimes, you know, it's like Pochettino, sometimes there's not many more things you can do with a squad.
I don't think there's much appetite down at Bournemouth to get somebody else in. That would be...
They wouldn't be able to sing the song that we discussed the other week, would they?
How does that song go again?
We went to Burnley and came back.
He
wonder if he's ever going to get a bigger job or if he's forever destined to be overlooked because, dare I say, he's perhaps a little bit light on the charisma factor. I think if he was like a bigger personality, then bigger clubs would be happier to entrust him
role. Interesting on Boxing Day. Obviously, he was playing... Arsenal, who are managed by a man now 5 years younger than Eddie Howe. And Eddie Howe's great calling card was that he was young. That was the thing about Eddie Howe, and no longer comes to us all.
Yeah. I actually think that Potter is ahead of him regarding, you know, both being Englishmen. It's not like Graham Potter is this Jose Mourinho during the press conferences, but he might have a slightly bit more charisma.
It was 5-0 to the Cherries at Brighton last season. Five different scorers as well, Frida, so you have every right to be excited about that fixture. As many people are indeed about Watford's clash with Villa, also similarly crucial in the relegation battle. They're both in the bottom three, and it is the Graham Taylor derby too. Villa coming off that win over Norwich. They've only ever beaten Watford once at Vicarage Road in the league. Tom Heaton was excellent against Norwich. Ben Foster was perhaps even better in that 1-1 draw away at Sheffield United as Nigel Pearson continues to work his particular brand of magic with the Hornets.
Mm.
Yeah.
Bigger magic being worked at Sheffield United, I think.
Well, that's also, yeah. I mean, but we've talked a lot about the wonderful Blades.
Both Tom Heaton and Ben Foster have had shots in the Premier League in 2019. So,
wow.
There you go.
Okay, who haven't we mentioned, Frida? Wolves, that's right. And Man City and Everton, to be fair. We've not really talked much about them. Wolves, they've got a busy time. They're home to City on Friday night. And then on Sunday, they're against the best team in the world, Liverpool. So that's, what, two absolutely massive games. Champions, then champions of the world.
Mm, but usually play quite well against City.
Yeah. Well, they beat them, didn't they, earlier in the season?
Yeah, and I do think that their style of play is probably better against better teams, so to say. They sometimes have a pretty hard time with low defenses. So, yeah.
But it is, in the words of Jurgen Klopp, a crime.
A crime.
I think, to put that fixture list together for Wolves. How can you play? It's not even the space of 48 hours. It's less than that.
45 hours.
Against the two best teams. Not even less than 45.
Is it less than 45 hours? So it's Friday night and then Sunday.
Yeah, but
so
Sunday
it's probably a bit less.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's 43 hours.
Okay. Wow, that's, it's coming down. Brutal.
It's not on, really.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how they do. Sometimes, you know, you're just kind of, you're just running on adrenaline and it might be the game after that it really catches up with them.
I mean, I think the ultimate for this was a couple of seasons ago. Burnley had two games in 48 hours. Not only did Sean Dyche name the same starting 11 for both, but in the second match, which was away at City, he didn't make a substitution.
Brilliant.
Just
how was it? How was the scoreline?
They lost.
Right.
But not massively. So. Okay.
Anyway, so there you go. City have that game Friday night against Wolves, and then they'll be taking on Everton, who 8.5 years after he got the sack in a corridor at Goodison Park, welcomed Carlo Ancelotti back. And he masterminded a thrilling 1-0 win over Burnley, a courtesy of a wonderful diving header from Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
It was probably a good opponent to start with, I think, because Burnley didn't really offer that much. They only had, they didn't have a single shot on target, which isn't great. Although Sean Dyche did say after the game, we quelled the match. I've not heard the word quelled in a post-match interview, possibly ever.
All right.
But that was more creativity in the interview than possibly shown on the pitch, I think.
Right, it's a tough run of games coming up for Carlo Ancelotti as he unveils his blueprint for Champions League football. At the Toffees, they've got, well, as I say, Newcastle on Saturday. Then they face Manchester City on New Year's Day, after which they have the Merseyside derby against his old friends Liverpool on the 5th of January.
But I think that's a quite good game for them because it's the FA Cup, and I think Klopp will be rotating quite heavily for that match.
Will he?
And I don't think he's desperate for a long FA Cup run. So it could be a good kind of start to the new year for Everton.
Right. Are you optimistic about Ancelotti's impact at Everton?
I think it would be really interesting. I mean, Carlo's all about pragmatism and not having a fixed system and you know, making sure that he finds something that works for the players. But I think there's a limit of how flexible you can be these days without then losing yourself in a system that is unrecognisable and doesn't really give players strict guidelines.
Wait, is he? I mean, he started out with strict like guidelines because he was 4-4-2, came up under Sacchi and that. And I know in his book he talks about his experience at Parma changing him when he had the kind of harrowing experience of being the man who turned down the Beatles. He sold Zola and turned down Roberto Baggio, and he realised afterwards, because neither of them would fit into his thing. I presume that's where he went, you know, maybe having a system isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that as such. I just think that football has, at the very top level, moved to the point where unless you have a very clearly defined idea of what you're trying to do, I think it's very, very difficult to compete against teams who then will have a clearly defined idea of what they do. You can do it if you have superstars,
so
if you have
like
the best teams.
That would be people like Klopp and Guardiola and Rodgers. Would that be fair? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a team that you can recognise without their shirts on, basically. A team that plays in the image of a coach and plays with certain non-negotiable principles.
Right.
It was interesting to see Allegri saying very similar things in a recent interview.
With James Horncastle?
Yeah, and in the New York Times as well, I think he did too, where he said, well, I'm not pragmatic, I'm not an ideologue, I like things to be flexible. But I think that might be the reason why some of the clubs feel that maybe he isn't quite the right manager, because they want this big idea. They want a coach who has a very well-defined vision and then comes with a you know, with an idea that then helps the clubs pick the right players to fit that, rather than being sort of a little bit trying to do a little bit of everything and then maybe losing yourself in the process. So I think it would be really fascinating in the Premier League specifically to see if this kind of approach from Ancelotti actually works.
Excellent. Well, Man City coming up this weekend. Paddy Power is up next in conversation with producer Ben with some odds on the weekend's action.
Hello, listeners. Did you enjoy your Christmas? Of course you did. And there's some more games coming up this weekend because the football never stops. So here's Lee Price on the line from Paddy Power to run us through the fixtures. Lee, let's start with a London derby, Arsenal versus Chelsea.
Well, to be honest with you, Ben, I wouldn't fancy either of these sides to do business for me on any weekend of the year at the minute. Despite their awful performance against Southampton, we make Chelsea the favourites for this one. They do tend to do better away from home. And they can't do much worse than what they served up on Boxing Day. It was like a plate full of Brussels sprouts. Arsenal rescued a draw away to Bournemouth, and that might be the most Arsenal sentence you can imagine. They're 15-8 to win this. The draw's 13-5. Chelsea are 13-10.
All right, over to the Etihad then, when Man City will be hosting the surprise package this season, Sheffield United. What's going to happen here, please?
Well, Pep won't say it, but I think I'm safe enough to. Man City are definitely playing for second place in the league right now. There is no title race. My New Year's resolution is to move on from trying to create one. As for this game, City are a huge 1-7 to win it, with Sheffield United 14-1 to get all 3 points, despite an excellent record on the road. The draw is 13-2.
And finally, Lee, at the bottom of the table, Watford are at home to Aston Villa. Who's going to come out victorious here?
Well, Watford's last two performances and, crucially, results have given them a real momentum and platform to build on, and that probably explains why they're the odds-on favourites of this one, as well as the fact that the game's been played at Vicarage Road. They're 10-11 to win this, with an Aston Villa victory priced at 13-5, the same odds as a draw. Villa virtually relegated Norwich last time out. This is another huge opportunity for them to do similar to a rival.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Rafa, you've gone on a special Totally Football show all about Jurgen Klopp, who's only about the best manager in the world.
I hasten to add, it wasn't behind your back, James.
No, that's
you
fine.
Knew about this. This is the sort of relationship we have.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
can go on off
you,
with others.
You were with Nick Miller?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it very much.
Okay. That's great. And that's out at the moment.
It is out now, as is the book.
Yes.
If you wanted to learn more about the, probably the title winning manager of 1920.
Oh, right. The titliest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good, I think, even if you don't like the subject so much, it's an interesting insight into what makes Klopp and, by extension, this Liverpool side tick.
Very nice. Once you're finished with that, why not have a bang on the Totally Scottish Football Show, in which the gang will be looking forward to the third Old Firm game of the season this Saturday. The two teams, Celtic and Rangers, coming into this second and first, uniquely enough. There'll be another Golazzo out soon, but when we can remember where we put it. But in the meantime, Frida, for exciting Italian news, how about Zlatan Ibrahimovic going back to Milan?
Yeah, seems like it's coming true.
Well, yes. Yeah. First they really wanted him, then they said, no, actually you're a bit old and you want loads of money, so we won't. And then now it's all happening. This is kind of it's a 6-month deal, but there's an option to extend it. He did brilliantly in Los Angeles. So he could do well for a struggling Milan side, which certainly they feel needs his personality.
Yeah, he probably will. I can't believe that he's as old as he is, because he's like, I agree with him, he's like a fine wine. He just becomes better every year.
Right.
But he's been, it's quite strange around Zlatan at the moment, at least in Sweden, because he's stirred up some emotions lately. I don't know if you've heard what happened to his statue.
They cut the nose off his statue.
Yeah,
was it
they
for
did.
Medicinal properties or something? Can you grind it up to make an aphrodisiac or something?
I'm not sure how they did it, but I'm surprised it took them this long.
To cut the nose off his statue?
Yeah, because to make a very long story quite short, Zlatan is...
A tit?
He's not really a club legend in Malmö FF, but
okay.
That was the club where he came through, and then he left pretty early when he was still very young and went to Ajax, and hasn't come back since. But I mean, he's, when you think about Malmö FF, you obviously think about Zlatan, and when they were going to put his statue up, at first they were going to put it in Stockholm, but actually the fans to AIK, who plays at the Friends Arena, they didn't want it there, which I can understand. So they said, well, let's put it in Malmö then, which, I mean, it was a pretty good idea at first. But then a couple of weeks later, Zlatan revealed that he's bought 25% of Hammarby, which is another Stockholm club and a big rival to Malmö FF. And the fans weren't so happy about that.
And that's
that.
When the nose cutting started.
Yeah, right. Among other things, yeah.
Other acts of vandalism.
Oh, really? Have other bits of the statue been got at?
Oh, yeah.
Daubed and painted and stuff.
Oh, paint, and they've written very, very bad words.
What have they
some
said?
Of them racist.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he's not very popular in Malmö at the moment.
I
don't think he should go back there, to be honest.
Right.
So Milan are thinking, it's just what we need.
Right, a statue, yeah.
Yeah, I guess you shouldn't put statues up of anyone that actually lives. It's better to wait a couple of years.
Does Sven Göran Eriksson have a statue in Gothenburg?
No, he doesn't.
What about Roy Hodgson in Malmö? Does he have one there?
No, but he should have one.
He should, shouldn't he?
Yeah.
Rafa, excitingly, you're off on a... I mean, how long is your winter break in Germany? Until mid-January, is it?
Yeah, mid-January. But I'm going to Spain for a week in January.
Because
that's where all the German teams are.
Right. Will you be catching up with RB Leipzig, the Herbmeisters?
No, they're not there, at least not to my knowledge. No, but Gladbach, Dortmund, Dusseldorf and Schalke are all sort of in the near vicinity of southern Spain, so...
Well, I'm sure that'll be fun, and we can read all about that in The Athletic, or indeed you can just tell us about it here. Brilliant. On our special European shows when they get going again. Nice. Very good. That, though, wraps it up for today's edition. The Totally Football Show is back on Monday, when it'll be in the extremely expert hands of Matt Davis Adams, and he'll be joined by all sorts of people. So that's a must listen. Do enjoy your weekend, listener. Many thanks to Frida Fagerlund for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a delight. Duncan Alexander.
Bye.
Bye. And Rafa, you'll be speaking to everyone on Monday, so that's terrific. Listener, bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.